wasn't in a daze the way he'd been previously. The door across the hall was still open, and he walked inside once more, now fully aware that the existence of the bizarre room was not, in fact, a dream. Alpha's collection floated silently while Lucas thumbed through some of the menus. There was no personal data, merely scientific notations about their height, weight, estimated age, and a few other variables Lucas couldn't translate.
Strange place, isn't it?
Asha said in Soren. He turned to see her leaning up against the doorframe.
Soren, huh? You've been gone quite a while.
I suppose so. She reverted back to English.
Can you imagine if they were awake? We'd have quite the little party on our hands.
Lucas scoffed. I bet we would have lost most of them between Norway, the Sentinels, and the fuel depot. They didn't have to survive in the wild the way we did. They wouldn't have been ready.
Can't argue with that.
She walked over to a blonde woman whose readout said she was Australian.
Boob job.
Lucas chortled.
What? Absolutely.
How can you tell with the bandages?
No one that skinny has a rack like that, and trust me, I was around a dozen pair of these a day in my line of work.
Stripping?
Acting, smartass.
Lucas walked over to the floating Frenchman, who looked to be about 30.
What was your show about, anyway? He asked.
Asha laughed.
Oh, wow, it seems like a century ago now. It was called Cyberhawks.
Sounds like a 1980s Kurt Russell movie.
Lucas slid down to rest on the ground. Asha joined him.
It was about Cassidy Clark, a sexy, ass-kicking government super spy. The big twist was that at the end of season one, you find out she's an android. We were only shooting the fourth episode when the first ship showed up.
A spy, huh? You don't seem like the government type.
I wasn't. Cassidy was a cute blonde actress they pulled off Gossip Girl. I played the villain, Victoria Ravenholm. She was the CEO of a biotech firm by day and ruler of the criminal underworld by night.
I'd say that suits you more.
There was far too much black leather involved.
Lucas laughed. Was it any good?
God, no, it was awful. I would have been lucky if I ever worked again after that. Thankfully, aliens showed up and I never had to read the reviews.
Lucas grinned and Asha fell silent for a long while. She spoke in a different tone.
You know, you really saved our asses up there, she said, lifting her head toward the CIC above them. Mine and Noah's. If you hadn't pulled us back, that blast that hit your stomach would have gone right through my chest and probably into the kit.
Lucas shrugged. Nah, that wouldn't have been a problem. Alpha could have just given you Sydney's heart over there. He motioned the Australian woman.
Oh, is that her name?
Yeah, and maybe he could have thrown in the silicone for good measure. Asha punched him in the arm so hard, Lucas felt it even through his meds, but she couldn't help but laugh. Her smile faded.
But really, thank you.
It was the first time she'd ever expressed such a sentiment, and it seemed earnest.
Lucas nodded. You should go see Noah. He's been asking for you.
Asking? Noah lit up when Lucas arrived in the barracks. He crawled over to his leg and pulled himself up by the fabric. After raising his arms, Lucas picked him up.
Lucas!
Noah said excitedly. Lucas beamed. You taught him that?
He's been to visit quite a lot, and he's really taken to those chair sessions you started with Alpha.
Alpha!
Noah squealed with delight, throwing his arms in the air. Wow, he's acquired quite the vocabulary. What other tricks have you taught him?
Asha folded her arms as she thought.
Well, let's see. Nunu is food. I guess he was going for nutrients. He says something like Hesip that I'm convinced is spaceship. His most common words, yes, no, up, down, and the like, are all in Soren.
As if he understood, Noah yelled out a word,
No!
I'm sure Alpha is loving this, Lucas said.
Asha took Noah from him.
He doesn't seem to mind. He's been in the lab a lot, working around your corpse. Something strange is going on, though. He's quiet, somber almost. I thought it was just because of you, but now I'm not so sure.
Noah was back on the floor, rifling through his toys, yelling, Yes, yes, in Soren.
I feel like he's been keeping something. Maybe he'll spill it now that you're awake.
The two kept playing with Noah until he wore himself out and fell asleep clutching his favorite hollow ball. His blonde hair had grown thicker, and Lucas guessed he'd gained about 10 pounds since he'd last seen him. The past month had been good to him, and perhaps being under Asha's watchful eye wasn't quite as dangerous as Lucas initially imagined. Over the next few days, Alpha said nothing to them that indicated something was amiss. But the truth was, he said very little to them at all. Before Lucas's injury, he was almost jovial with the promise of escape to Sora, but now? He spoke rarely of future plans, only concerned with Lucas's ongoing recovery and the continued functionality of the ship. But he walked around as if in a daze. Sometimes Lucas would pass him in the hall, and he wouldn't even acknowledge his presence. Something was wrong, all right. Eventually, Lucas had enough. He retrieved Asha from her now reassembled quarters in the armory, and the two of them marched into Alpha's lab, shutting the door behind them. "Hello," Alpha said politely. "What is the purpose of this visit?" He didn't look up from his table. It didn't seem like he was actually working on anything. "What are you doing?" Lucas asked.
I was just calibrating the..."
"The what now?"
"It is a very complex device. I cannot..."
Asha interrupted. "Cut the bullshit, Alpha."
"Excuse me?"
"You've been moping around here for the past month. I thought it was because you felt guilty about Lucas getting shot, but it's clear it's something beyond that."
"I regret my involvement in his injury. I should have properly scanned the ship before..."
"But that's not what it is it? There's something else."
"How do you know such a thing? Does your species subset have latent telepathy?"
Asha rolled her eyes. Lucas answered. "It's a bit easier than that. You're not yourself. I've only been up a few days, but I can see it. Just tell us what's going on." Alpha sighed. He stood up from his seat at the desk and began pacing around the room.
"When we made our escape from the station, Commander Omicron arrived in the system at nearly the precise moment we activated the core."
Lucas remembered the flash he had seen on his screen of Omicron's face. "I thought that's what I saw, but I wasn't sure." Alpha continued.
"As such, our voyage is now doomed."
"Wait, what?" Asha said, confused. "We've been running away from him this entire time. We haven't seen him in a month."
"Such things do not matter. When he arrived back in the Earth system, we disabled his ship before we departed. Therefore, he was not able to immediately follow us. His ship would have been stranded for days before repairs were made."
Alpha increased the rate of his pacing.
"As such, I believe taking a day to broadcast the solar storm virus to the station was not putting us at a risk. It seems I miscalculated."
"I don't get it," Lucas said. "What does that have to do with our journey?"
"Omicron jumped into the system mere seconds before we jumped out of it. That means when we leave our space-time tunnel and arrive in Sorin space, he will no longer be days behind us, but minutes. The highly advanced long-range core in his craft can be reactivated after previous use in mere seconds, not hours like in most vessels. He will intercept our craft."
Lucas began to understand. Asha pressed.
"So what? We'll fight him. We took out 100 Sentinels leaving Earth. We blasted through dozens of Zolans at the fuel depot. We can take him."
"We cannot," Alpha said grimly. "Our ship has almost no reserve weaponry, and his craft is the most advanced in the fleet. We exploited a technical hole in the ship's design that only I was aware of, a trick that will not work twice."
Alpha finally stopped pacing.
"Rather, we will undoubtedly be disabled mere minutes after arriving in Sorin space, and then we will be boarded. I will be apprehended and you will be executed."
Asha didn't buy it.
"We can fight. I've killed plenty of your damn soldiers. We all have. We have weapons."
"She's right," Lucas said. "We can make a stand. With what we've lived through, I like our odds."
Alpha shook his head. "You do not comprehend. Commander Omicron travels with an escort of elite soldiers that act as his personal guard. They are highly trained and the most deadly fighting force my civilization has to offer. Picking off starving infantry men on Earth or ill-prepared custodians in a remote fuel depot has not readied you for this. They were silent. Commander Omicron himself may be more dangerous than all the members of his squadron combined. As I explained, he is a shadow, infused with more strength, speed, and intelligence than all of us. His feats upon the battlefield are legendary.
Legends can be exaggerated, Asha said.
Not in his case, I assure you.
So what? Lucas said. You're just giving up?
Alpha sat back down at his table, avoiding eye contact.
I regret my role in causing this. We should have raided the fuel depot outright instead of waiting an additional day. This all may have been avoided.
And we might have died in the attempt, or he might have caught us anyway. There's no point in thinking like that.
Alpha said nothing. Lucas circled around him.
The Alpha I know would have a plan. You've had one every step of the way so far. As the smartest person left alive in your civilization, it would be a disgrace for you to roll over now without even trying.
Asha broke in.
What about your family? Your people murdered them. Omicron probably did it himself for all you know. Don't you want to know why they died? Don't you want to avenge them?
Alpha threw his claw up dismissively. Of course, but such desires are not possible. We do not have the resources to survive this upcoming encounter.
Then make them, Lucas said. Build them. It's what you do. We have time. How far away is Sora?
43 days.
You're telling me you can't make us battle ready by then? That's an eternity.
We have no materials for such projects.
Of course we do, Lucas said, raising his arms out wide. Use the ship. Use whatever you have to that isn't absolutely necessary for us to fly and breathe. There's more technology in this thing than the entirety of our former planet.
It does not matter.
Lucas was growing angry. He shoved his finger into Alpha's face, inches away from his sharp gray teeth.
It does matter. I haven't come halfway around the galaxy to die a light year away from the finish line, and neither have you.
Lucas turned and stormed out of the room, shoving aside a piece of equipment hanging from the ceiling as he did so.
Asha turned to Alpha, her voice softer.
He's right, you know. You've gotten us this far. We know you can get us to the end. All you have to do is try, and we'll do the rest.
She left in silence as Alpha rubbed his head with a claw. That night in the water chamber, Lucas couldn't sleep. Alpha's news was weighing on him, and he wrestled with the reality of the situation. After all this, everything they survived, was he right? Did they even have a chance? If Alpha, in all his infinite genius, thought the odds were impossible, what shot did they really have? But when had any of their battles ever seemed like fair fights? A city of cannibals, a fleet of assault drones, a station full of soldiers. Were they really that outmatched here? They had to be. He could see it in Alpha's eyes. There was a hopelessness Lucas hadn't seen since they met, when Alpha was lying helpless in the sands of the Portland crater. The strangest part was, Alpha wasn't even sad for himself. He was confident he would live through the ordeal, though a life of servitude to the group that murdered your loved ones was hardly a wanted outcome. But rather he seemed sad for them. These humans he'd brought so far from home, ones that by now, with all they'd been through, he felt a kinship with. It was a mutual feeling, as Lucas hadn't thought twice about risking life and limb to save Alpha back at the depot. The scientist was now sorrowful that he would not be able to return the favor. But he had, hadn't he? Lucas felt around for his long, curved scar. He'd given him an almost entirely new set of internal organs and brought Asha back from the brink of madness. If they were keeping score, they likely still owed him. But to Alpha, it didn't matter. His mistake allowing Omicron to catch up with them had made it all pointless. Lucas wondered if they would be executed like he said. Perhaps they'd be thrown in a tank like their new crew members and give it to some other Zalan scientist for study and experimentation. Surely that would be a fate even worse than death, and it wasn't an idea that made Lucas feel any better about their prospects. He tossed and turned, but was unable to make his bedding any more comfortable. Eventually he gave up, and he drifted off to sleep despite his unease. Lucas opened his eyes sleepily, minutes or hours later. He couldn't be sure.
It was still dark, and as he regained focus, he saw a familiar vision. A shadowy figure standing at the foot of his bed. As it saw him stir, it took a step closer. Asha. Please, God, not again, he prayed silently to a long-absent deity, desperately hoping she hadn't relapsed into insanity. But as she took another step, her body was illuminated in the blue glow of the tanks. She wore nothing. Lucas's heart continued racing, but now for an entirely different reason. The light showed her graceful curves, but the darkness hid her litany of battle scars. She was truly a beautiful creature, more so than any he'd seen before. Reaching the mattress, she kneeled down and crawled toward him. He was speechless, breathless. He only managed to get out one word. Why? She looked into his eyes, and after lingering a moment, kissed him. Why not? She shoved him down against the mattress and broke into a full smile that Lucas had never seen her wear before. Even in the darkness, it was captivating, as was the rest of her, bathed in the dull blue light. He asked no further questions.
Chapter 21 Lucas slept more soundly than he had in years that night. The weight of the old apocalypse and their imminent destruction lifted from his mind. When he woke, Asha was gone. He was hardly surprised, though he had to make sure the entire thing hadn't been a dream. Overturned stacks of books and a bite mark on his collarbone indicated the events of the night had indeed occurred, though Lucas still had trouble believing it. Why not, she'd said. With all but certain death mere weeks away, was there anything to lose? Grab the closest or only person next to you and try to enjoy your last few moments. Or was it more than that? Lucas remembered the look in her eyes and her smile, that smile. There was something deeper there. Reflecting for a moment, he realized he'd felt it for a while now, and there had been something between them that was downright palpable, especially since he'd woken up from his injury. A wound sustained while saving her. Perhaps that had something to do with it as well. He supposed he'd get some clue when he saw her that day. He found her in the CIC, rapidly thumbing through the holotable display. She'd clearly been much more immersed in the technology the past few weeks. She glanced up and caught his eye. Hey, he said. Hey. There was a pause that lasted a few beats too long. Asha broke the silence. So, you're not going to get all girly about this, are you? Lucas looked caught off guard by her frankness. No. Great. And don't go bragging to Alpha either. Lucas laughed. You know, I really doubt he'd care. He was probably watching on the monitors. They both laughed at that one, and the tension evaporated from the room. Whatever her motivations, Lucas was content to leave them a mystery. They debated what should be done with the day. Should they train in the chair? Getting through the last few Soren lessons seemed a bit pointless now. Should they work out? Lucas had a long path ahead of him to get back to where he was before the injury, though clearly Asha had made good use of the last month. Her body was, well, perfect, as Lucas had discovered. His mind wandered as he watched Asha absent-mindedly swirl through galaxy maps on the holotable. His thoughts were interrupted by Alpha on the comm.
Crew to laboratory level.
Lucas was surprised. After their conversation yesterday, he thought Alpha would be even more sealed off. What was he summoning them for now? When they arrived, the lab was humming with various devices. Alpha was at his desk, which was littered with all manner of mechanical parts. His metal claw was busy rifling through some circuitry while he worked on an entirely different set of electronics with his good arm. At the same time, he seemed to be looking over a technical readout floating in front of him. How his brain was able to process so many different tasks, Lucas could not imagine. All of them ceased when he saw them.
Welcome, Alpha said warmly.
What's going on? What are you doing? Lucas asked coldly as he approached the desk. He was still displeased with Alpha.
Thank you for coming. I understand that you felt our discussion yesterday was unproductive.
You could say that. He closed the readout in front of him, so there was nothing between the three of them.
Last night I had a revelation.
You weren't the only one.
Your words found a place in my core. You were correct in your assessment that it would be foolish to abandon hope after all that we have overcome to reach this point in our journey.
Lucas folded his arms as Alpha continued.
Perhaps hope itself is foolish, but I would be remiss not even to attempt to craft a solution that will allow all of us to survive.
So what does that mean? Asha asked warily.
Commander Omicron must be destroyed.
That produced a glint of excitement in her eye.
But what about what you said yesterday? Lucas asked. You made it sound like he and his troops are practically invincible.
Alpha nodded.
That remains true. It is the reason we will have to work exceptionally hard if we are to stand any chance at surviving a confrontation.
What are we supposed to do?
There is little the pair of you can do to aid me with what needs to be done. Rather, you must train yourselves to be more quick-thinking, stronger, and faster than you have ever been. You must maximize your potential as much as is humanly possible, you might say. Anything less than perfection is unacceptable for the task ahead.
We can do that, Lucas said. His muscles had atrophied from his prolonged unconsciousness, but with 37-hour days to kill, he imagined he could inch back to his former level of fitness.
And what are you doing? Asha asked. She was already miles ahead of him, but knowing her, she would push herself to the absolute limit if it meant a chance to survive.
I will train as well, but more importantly, I must craft weapons that can kill immortals and armor that can protect us from them. This shall be no easy feat.
I thought you said we didn't have the materials.
Alpha lifted up a holographic menu and coasted through pages and pages of schematics. The designs were complex, and even if Lucas could recognize some of the symbols, it was unclear what was being envisioned in these three-dimensional pages.
I did not sleep last night, as I could not get visions of theoretical weaponry out of my head. I have created a number of designs that I think may suit our purposes. In part, they have been fashioned from military prototypes in production on Zala, combined with a few of my own ideas, ideas that will make them actually work.
Lucas breathed a sigh.
I knew you'd come through.
I have not yet.
Alpha waved his claw as he stopped on one of the designs. He sat back in his chair.
Be forewarned. Even with such devices, should they function as intended, our chances of survival are almost non-existent. Whatever trials we have faced to date, they will pale in the face of this upcoming conflict.
That doesn't matter, Asha said, so long as we try. Besides, I can think of less dignified ways to die than at the hand of a legendary alien general.
Alpha scoffed.
Commander Omicron can imagine a variety of ways to end your life without dignity, and he has done so across many Sorin worlds. Do not delude yourselves with visions of an honorable death.
You're sure they're not just going to blast us to bits the moment they see us?
Lucas asked.
Their behavior has always indicated an attempt to capture, not annihilate. As such, we will be boarded. Much of the fight will take place here.
And the rest of it?
If we survive on the... on his ship.
So, what exactly are you going to be making?
Lucas peered into the floating schematics, but couldn't tell what it was supposed to be when it was all disassembled. Though one of the pieces did match the item in Alpha's right hand.
I will inform you upon completion. I am still sorting through concepts to ascertain what should take priority in the limited time we have.
40-odd days seems like a lot.
These are items that would take a team months to craft back on Zala.
Well, that's why you're better than them, right? Said Asha.
Alpha chortled.
We shall see.
The next 2 weeks were a whirlwind of activity.
Alpha was in his lab for practically days at a time, only venturing to the engineering bay or CIC on rare occasions. Usually it was to pull something out of the wall, and he was appropriating many pieces of the ship's technology for whatever it was he was working on. They left him be and focused on their own training. There were no more Sorin lessons, no flight simulators, and unfortunately, less time lounging with Noah. They let him crawl around nearby as they worked out together, and he was content enough with his toys, but he had to be an afterthought. His survival depended on what was to come, as did their own, and as such they trained with a laser-like focus. Distractions were no longer permitted. Well, almost. Every night for the past 2 weeks, after a hard day's work, Lucas was visited by the same nightly specter, one he welcomed. Asha crept through the ship to the water chamber to recreate the events of that first night. Each evening was more memorable than the last, but every morning she was gone. Lucas didn't bother asking why, or wonder out loud why they couldn't just share quarters. He let her come and go as she pleased. Lucas felt more connected to her than ever. Their nights and days were spent almost entirely in each other's company. Their only sparring was physical, for combat preparedness purposes. They avoided verbal altercations entirely. The weight of probable death had whitewashed whatever problems they'd had. They had almost killed each other on more than one occasion, but the number of times they'd saved one another from death was starting to rival that tally. Lucas putting himself in between her and the energy rifle blast seemed to be the tipping point. Skepticism had turned to trust, anger to lust, hate to love. Lucas wasn't sure what he felt for her. Was it love? Or was it two people with nothing to lose, trapped on a spaceship for 6 months, surviving more near-death experiences together than was statistically possible? Whatever had sparked it, he couldn't put the flame out now. It was true, he felt kinship with Alpha and even Noah. But his connection to Asha ran deeper. He'd felt it sooner than that first night in the water chamber, but he'd shoved it out of his thoughts. Despite their wary alliance that had begun months ago, for a long time she had still felt like a possible threat. He thought back to the most recent time she tried to finish the job, when she was driven out of her mind by pod memories. She wasn't even attacking him, she was trying to kill some would-be rapist in Alaska. But that whole event was a look into her soul. He was the source of her passion and her capacity to love. Love drove her hate, and it wasn't blind or sadistic the way he'd imagined. Since her recovery, he felt he understood her, and she him. That's why, without a moment's hesitation, he had thrown himself in front of that blast. His body knew what his mind wouldn't admit. He'd do anything for her, even die, and he almost did. Lucas wrestled the thoughts to the back of his mind, though every morning when he woke, he was a little disappointed she hadn't stayed. Despite the fact she was offering herself to him each night, there were still defenses in place, barriers that needed to be broken. Not that he was an open book. There was still so much he hadn't told her about his life both before and after the war. He thought of Sonia and Nathan more often now. His love for them had sustained him during a trip through an ocean of devastation. Though he had lost his faith in traditional notions of God, he wondered if, should he die, might he see them again? He'd heard a theory about death once that had stayed with him. A condemned soul speculated that heaven might be going back to the time in your life in which you were happiest and living there forever. He thought if he died out here in space, perhaps he could wind up living in some past lazy summer. He and his wife, young and beautiful, their son even more so. Maybe when they'd rented out that cottage in Cape Cod for a week. It was hard to imagine a more ideal time in his life. But sometimes he wondered if he might come back here instead. On the Ark, he had a stalwart extraterrestrial friend, an adoring bright-eyed child, and a woman in his bed that had been worth 100 trillion mile journey. If he could ignore the ever-present shadow of death, it might have felt pretty perfect itself. Lucas looked down at Asha, fast asleep, as all these thoughts floated through his mind. He ignored pending death, forgot about a decade of drinking, an interstellar war, and 100 murders he'd committed since. He was content. The lights of the water chamber grew brighter as they were programmed to at 0600. Lucas squinted and found himself stunned when he saw Asha remained next to him. It was the first time she hadn't left in the night. Her eyes fluttered, and she too looked shocked at her surroundings. She stammered as she saw Lucas was already awake.
I was pretty wiped from yesterday, she explained.
It's all right.
Let me just...
She scrambled for her clothes, which were strewn all around them. Both of them looked up when there was a familiar clank in the metal hallway ahead. Of all the days, Alpha was walking toward them down the corridor. These creatures couldn't quite smile in the traditional sense, but Lucas imagined that must be what he was doing. His translator wasn't verbally relaying his current thoughts on what he saw in front of him. Asha wrapped herself in the covers, her usual lack of modesty not extending to aliens, it seemed. Lucas just sat on the mattress with his arms folded around his knees.
Hi, Alpha. Greetings.
To what do we owe the pleasure?
Asha said, now as covered as she could manage.
I have something to show you. Please accompany me to the laboratory.
And you couldn't have just told us that on the comm?
Asha asked menacingly.
I was overcome with excitement. Apologies, I did not mean to intrude.
Asha just shook her head. Lucas had already thrown on a pair of pants and shirt and walked toward Alpha.
All right, let's go then.
He turned back to Asha, still wrapped in the sheet. Asha?
I'll meet you up there,
she said as she fumbled around with her hastily assembled pile of clothes. The elevator ride was a tad uncomfortable as the pair stood in silence. Lucas felt obligated to break it.
You know,
that's not going to interfere with our training or anything. Alpha waved him off.
I am not concerned. It was expected.
Lucas raised his eyebrows.
Expected?
Alpha nodded.
Imagine my delight when the last two sane humans on Earth turned out to be a male and female. I knew biology would assuredly run its course on the journey, though I did not expect it to take this long, mind you.
Lucas was confused. You planned this?
I planned nothing, but it was good fortune the pair of you have become compatible after much initial hostility. There may be hope for your species yet.
What? There are whole worlds of Saurians out there.
Yes, but you are an alternatively evolved strain. You are physiologically unique. The differences are subtle, but present. I've studied your species intensely for years now, and there are many aspects of your genetics that are remarkable.
We're not doing this to repopulate the universe with humans. It's something else. Alpha looked surprised.
An emotional connection? A pleasant side effect, how fortunate for you, though it is likely the result of proximity compounded by intense duress.
I see you're a romantic, then.
Sarcasm. Humorous.
So let me get this straight. You wanted Asha and I on the ship so we could be the last surviving members of our species.
You were preferable to my current crew, which was in stasis, devoid of brainwaves, so yes.
The elevator continued its slow crawl. Alpha quickly continued.
Though you have proven yourselves more than capable on this journey, I am certain without the pair of you I would have never escaped the clutches of your dead planet. He paused. Additionally, I enjoyed the presence of others on board. Years of solitude can warp and degrade the mind.
Alpha had convinced Lucas the pair of them was more than another science project, though it was still a strange concept. Lucas thought of Earth. In the past few months, it had likely cooked even further. Soon the poles would be the only proper place to reside, and then they too would go up in flames. Outside of their brain-dead companions, he and Asha really were the last man and woman on Earth, well, from Earth. Could love actually be found in that? Or was it just proximity and duress, the way Alpha said? As the elevator doors opened, Asha was already waiting for them at the end of the hall. She was dressed in baggy black pants and a white tank top and leaning in the door frame of the stasis room. She answered their next question.
I took the ladder. I hate those elevators.
Lucas was glad she'd missed their conversation. Alpha approached the lab door and opened it, ushering them inside. The room was an utter disaster, with pieces of metal and wire everywhere. Lucas wondered how on earth Alpha was getting anything done. There were materials he'd pilfered from all over the ship, and Lucas and Asha had to tread carefully around it all in order not to trip. Finally, they arrived at the desk where two long cases lay.
This item has been crafted specifically for Asha.
The first case opened on its own accord. A long, flat, black blade was inside. The handle was laced with electronic circuitry, some of which fed into the dark metal above it.
Take it, Alpha said. It is not meant for my grip.
Asha picked it up, looking at it with wonder. It was quite a bit longer than her arm, and the blade was so thin that when turned sideways, it was barely visible at all.
It's light,
she remarked with awe.
Really light. What is this made of?
Alpha looked proud.
An alloy that I will not attempt to pronounce in your language, but one more durable than anything you have crafted on Earth. It is what constitutes the armored parts of this ship.
You forged this out of the hull? Lucas asked.
I secured a piece from the inside. Normally, the alloy is not able to be rendered thin enough to forge a blade, but I devised a process to do so using and...
It's lovely,
Asha said, enraptured by her new weapon. She held it aloft in the overhead light.
Much of the coming combat will be close quarters, and I thought you could put it to proper use.
Absolutely.
That will cut through any class of armor when wielded with proper force. Additionally, it is laced with electricity to be used as a paralyzing agent.
Alpha motioned to the handle. Asha slid her finger across a small protrusion at the hilt, and the black blade crackled with blue electricity. Asha's eyes lit up in a similar fashion.
May it serve you well.
Asha was too floored to say any more. Alpha turned to Lucas and motioned to the second case. As the lid rose, Lucas couldn't believe what lay in front of him. It was Natalie, transformed. His beloved gun had been salvaged from the brink of death, and from the looks of it, given a hell of a makeover. Alpha spoke as Lucas took it into his hands.
Our weapons are too large for you to wield effectively. I took the liberty of infusing your damaged rifle with Zollin technology, and I must say I have created a weapon more effective than either planet offered originally.
The grip and stock and even the trigger were the same, and the faded Natalie could still be seen etched into the rear. The sight was retrofitted with a holographic scope, and the magazine had been replaced by a cylindrical power pack. The entire frame was streaked with circuitry, and a few lights on the side glowed a dim blue. Whatever personified vision Lucas had seen of Natalie in his dream, this was more beautiful.
What does she shoot?
Lucas said, overlooking the use of the pronoun.
Superheated plasma rounds, but ones far more volatile than anything in the typical Zollin arsenal. The technology is normally reserved for artillery, but I've managed to condense it into a much smaller package. As such, it will melt through all manner of materials with ease and produce a great deal of concussive force.
Lucas hadn't even noticed Natalie had been taken down off the mantle in his room. He supposed he'd been occupied with other activities, but it felt incredible to have his treasured weapon back. Despite its new killing power, it felt like the same old gun in his hands. There was no trace of the wound that had crippled it, and the gun seemed to hum with power.
I ask that you not test fire your weapon inside the ship. It may cause complications with the hull. I have programmed a simulation that will mimic the effects of firing for training purposes.
Alpha presented them with two more gifts. Lucas received a short knife made out of the same material as Asha's sword, though not electrified, and Asha a case of ammo for her magnum. The bullets were explosive, and Alpha said something about them containing microscopic fission reactions before his translator became a jumbled mess of sounds when he couldn't explain the technology any further. He then motioned to the rear of the room, where two unfinished sets of power armor lay stretched out, one larger, one smaller.
"I have not yet been able to complete your armor at this time. Converting from a Zollan body type to a human one is a rather prolonged process, and the weapons took precedence. But I hope to be finished shortly so that you may grow accustomed to them."
A rough metal skeleton of some other device sat a few feet away. It was large, quite large.
"And what's that?"
"Another project, one that requires much more work, though it may prove to be the most necessary of all. You will understand when I am finished."
Alpha turned away from the machine.
"I imagine you would like to test out your weapons. Feel free to do so. But please do not destroy the ship before we have a chance to face Omicron."
The armory seemed like the most logical place to try out their new gear. The boxes upon boxes of weapons they'd taken from Earth were largely useless now. Bullets alone, Alpha had told them, would prove futile against the advanced armor of Omicron's elite squadron, while the explosives would have to be extremely well placed to have an effect. Asha had already chopped up a handful of storage crates with her sword and was practically giddy as she tore through a nearby light machine gun like it was foam. Her form wasn't exactly that of a seasoned samurai, but it wasn't bad either. Lucas, meanwhile, couldn't fire the newly refurbished Natalie without carving giant holes in the wall, so he set about employing Alpha's test-fire mode instead. The program caused the gun to simulate recoil in its three main firing modes. It could shoot a stream of small plasma rounds like a typical machine gun. It could be focused to line up a distant shot like a sniper rifle. And finally, a switch with the Zollan symbol for carnage turned it into an area of effect shotgun, blasting a million tiny plasma particles at close range. The barrel narrowed and widened, lengthened and shortened based on which option was selected. The kickback when he test-fired its final setting was enormous, and the sound deafened them both for a few seconds. If the gun was live, Lucas would imagine the metal wall in front of him would be a large, smoking hole. But he would have to wait to be sure. Asha had no safety mode on her blade, so when she shoved it into the wall and activated the electricity, they both jumped as the surge blew out the power to the door. The controls smoked and sparked, and they could no longer close the entryway. Asha merely shrugged as Lucas glared at her. He busied himself thumbing through the different scope options, which were a significant upgrade from Natalie's old crosshairs. Zoom went up to 20 times magnification, and as he scaled back and aimed at Asha, he could see that his lenses included thermal, infrared, and ultraviolet, all of which set his target apart from the background, turning her some bright color of white, orange, or purple. He was surprised to find one last option, simply marked X. Upon activation, Asha turned skeletal, and he found he could see through each crate, even over into the next room if he focused correctly. He could only imagine the tactical implications of being able to see through walls.
"Could you not point that thing at me?" Asha said as she ceased sword swinging. "I'd rather not be vaporized before we even start fighting."
"It's not hot," Lucas said as he tapped an indicator on the gun.
It was only programmed to fire when the scope read Lucas's eye, to help prevent having his own gun used against him. Alpha said that he had entered Asha's retinal pattern as well, in the instance that Lucas had been killed and she needed the weapon to defend herself. It was a morbid thought, but a logical one. As such, he let Asha familiarize herself with it for a bit while he handled her sword. It was light. Impossibly light if it was as durable as Alpha claimed. Lucas picked up a submachine gun he now deemed useless, tossed it in the air, and cleaved it into two with ease. He may as well have been cutting through a throw pillow. To test the metal of his new knife, he struck it against the blade. The two were indeed forged from the same material. They sparked brightly, but left not even a scratch on one another. After only a minute, Asha wanted it back. At the end of the day, Lucas mounted Neo Natalie back on the perch above his bed. Sure, half the weapon was now Zollan, but it was more beautiful than ever. He thought back to his dream where the gun had come to life before him in an ethereal form of her namesake.
She really was his guardian angel, watching over him during these long, hard years. He'd certainly test that title during the upcoming battle. But she wasn't the only one in his corner. Asha walked down the corridor as she did nightly, this time with her sword strapped to her back. It was clear she was never going to let it out of her sight, and it joined Christian's magnum as a permanent fixture on her person. Lucas sat at his desk as she approached, unwinding with a worn, water-stained copy of Brave New World. It hadn't occurred to him until recently that all that remained of Earth's treasured literature was sitting right here in his quarters. He had some classics, sure, but authors like James Joyce, Ayn Rand, George Orwell, and the ancients like Homer and Dante were all lost to history. He'd searched around his collection and found no trace of the works of Shakespeare or a single copy of the Bible. Well, at least Harry Potter lived on. Asha unslung her sword and flung it at the opposite wall behind Lucas. He was so used to such commotion around her that he only directed his eyes upward toward her while his nose remained buried in the book. "Watch this," she said. She was wearing a small metal cuff Lucas had never seen before. Bending her wrist upward, a small light activated in the center. Immediately, the sword flew out of the wall and back into her hand, 15 feet away. That made Lucas put his book down. Whoa. "Alpha just finished up the bracelet a few hours ago." "How does it work?" "Some sort of directed electromagnetism, but I had him spare me the boring details. Just nice to know I've got some range on this thing if I need it." "Even still, I wouldn't let that out of your hand too often." She looked at the handle and swung the blade around in a circle across her palm. "Yeah, I'm worried one of these times it's going to come back and take a few fingers off." She walked past the desk and jammed the blade into the top. "Hey!" Lucas cried sharply. Asha rolled her eyes. "Do you really care about this stuff?" she said, motioning to his furniture. "In a few weeks, we're going to either be dead or on some alien planet. Either way, I doubt you'll be taking it with you." Glaring at her, Lucas dislodged the blade from the wood and handed it back to her. "Fine," she said flatly, and threw it into the opposite wall once more. Mercifully, it stuck a full foot away from where Natalie was perched. Lucas continued his glare. Asha ignored him and sat down on the edge of his desk. "You think this new ordinance is going to get us through?" Lucas leaned back in his chair, his scowl fading. "Honestly, I've no idea. Truth is, I've expected to die nearly every day for the last few years. Why should this be any different?" Asha was silent, her feet dangling loosely. "The Ark has been a sanctuary, sure. But it was always only temporary," Lucas continued. "Yeah," Asha said. "But it's the closest thing to something like home in a long while now." Lucas couldn't dispute that. "I never got to defend my home back on Earth. It was gone when I showed up. At least this time I'll have a chance." Asha lay down on the mattress and looked toward the ceiling. Lucas set his own book down and joined her. Only the faint whir of machinery was audible as the lights dimmed. "I don't want to die yet," Asha said quietly. "I want to make it there. I want to see what all this was for."
"We will."
"Will we?"
"We will."
Chapter 22. The day had come. Lucas shifted uncomfortably in his handcrafted power armor. Even after training in it every day for the last few weeks, and despite Alpha's constant adjustments, parts still pinched him at times. The suit wasn't pretty, that was for sure. It was a patchwork of unpainted dark metal, some from the original armor they'd taken from the mothership, the rest scavenged from the Ark itself. Given an unlimited amount of time, Alpha said he could make armor almost entirely out of the hull alloy that composed Asha's sword. But in a crunch, he had to make do with a few select pieces of plating in key areas. The electronic implants in the suit allowed Lucas to move more quickly and exhibit strength beyond the capacities of his natural body, though he had to be in perfect shape to be able to utilize it correctly. It had taken him 3 days and a dozen bruises just to learn to walk in the thing, and only recently had he fully mastered running and jumping. Lucas stood with Natalie on his back and his helmet in his hand.
His black-bladed knife was fixed to his chest, and he surveyed the CIC about 3 inches taller than he stood normally. Beside him was Asha, her own armor a similar design to his. She too had her helmet off, and her dark hair was pulled back into a high ponytail. Together, the pair of them stared into the view screen, the hazy blue-green light of the space-time tunnel greeting them. It wasn't much longer now. Soon they'd arrive in a new solar system, 15 planets, 80 moons, and a yellow sun only slightly larger than their own. Somewhere out there, Sora, their haven, awaited. Lucas was jolted out of his thoughts by a thud and a vibration that shook the floor. He looked at Asha, and the calamity repeated itself, then again, even louder. It was getting closer. They turned around. The central door of the CIC opened, and a giant armored mechanical monster came lumbering through, the top of it almost grazing the doorframe. Lucas marveled at the behemoth. It wasn't a threat. He knew who was responsible for it. It continued its march toward them, each step shaking the room even more. It had 2 legs and 2 arms, all 4 of which were wider than Lucas's entire body. One appendage ended with a large metallic recreation of a Zalin claw. The other arm had no digits, only a massive cylinder that had to be some sort of weapon. The torso was heavily plated, and Lucas recognized the familiar black alloy. The suit had no neck, causing the head to be engulfed into the body. 2 brightly lit slits vaguely resembled eyes. The suit spoke. "Greetings." The familiar mechanical voice now had actual machinery to go with it.
"Holy shit," Asha said breathlessly.
The center of the mech split open, and as it did, the arms and backward-bending leg plating followed suit. Alpha stepped out and walked toward them.
"Behold our final weapon," he said, motioning behind him. "I feared I would not complete production in time."
Lucas walked over to the mech.
"Jesus, this thing is huge."
And it was. It had to be 11 feet tall and nearly that wide.
"I designed it, making sure that it could provide maximum protection while still moving about the ship. It should be able to access all the main areas, though a few smaller corridors will remain out of its jurisdiction."
Asha ran her hand over the right arm that ended in a giant cannon.
"How did you make this thing?"
Alpha motioned for them to follow him around to the rear. As they reached the backside, a familiar blue glow was visible, coming out of the cracks of the plating. Alpha opened a panel and their suspicion was confirmed. The blue null core that had initially powered their ship resided in the base of the suit's spine.
"You're using the old core to run this thing?"
Alpha nodded.
"It was the only power source that was capable of supporting its tremendous energy needs."
Lucas was amazed.
"But that was powering this entire ship, and you have all that crammed into one suit?"
"Correct. As such, it should be a powerful weapon in the coming fight."
Alpha reached up to a section on the back that was almost entirely encased in the durable black alloy that made up much of their own plating.
"There is another item to show you,"
Alpha said as he pressed the button and the panel swung open. Lucas and Asha's eyes widened in surprise. There sat Noah, clutching his hollow ball. He smiled when he saw them.
You're putting Noah in here? You've got to be joking," Asha said.
"I know it may appear to be unsafe, but I specifically designed this compartment with his protection in mind. Believe me when I say that it is the most secure location on the ship."
Lucas was unconvinced.
"He'll be in the heat of battle. Can't we just hide him somewhere?"
Alpha shook his head.
"They will be able to find him, and there is always a chance that his location may become depressurized during conflict."
Noah kicked his feet wildly.
"Alpha! Alpha!"
"This compartment is reinforced with a layer of protection as thick as our ship's hull. It could withstand an antimatter bomb. He will be safe, I assure you, for at least as long as we are alive."
Lucas looked up at the Colossus in front of him. Maybe he was right. What use was there in hiding Noah if they all were killed anyway? They might as well tie his fate directly to their own, and being fixed inside an impenetrable cocoon was probably the most ideal place to be. Alpha left the mech standing where it was and walked over to the captain's chair. There would be no need for a turret gunner, no reason to spool the white null core up for another jump. As such, the three of them remained in the CIC as Alpha took the controls. The blue-green glow waved hazily in front of them.
"Are you both prepared for what is to come?"
Alpha said as the neural connections took hold of his temples. "As ready as we'll ever be," Lucas replied. A million stars greeted them as the ship decelerated out of the tunnel. Unfamiliar constellations appeared before Lucas's eyes, and in the middle one star shone more brightly than the rest. The central sun of the Sorin system was a distant beacon at this range. Alpha was not stopping to admire the scenery. He immediately dialed up the speed as high as he could muster. The ship took a fair amount of time to reach its top velocity, which Lucas had learned from the Sentinel chase back in Earth's system. It seemed Alpha was hoping he was wrong. Perhaps his calculations had been off. Perhaps if they just flew fast enough, they'd reach Sorin-controlled space before Omicron showed up. The crew waited in silence. A minute passed, then two. Lucas felt hope beginning to creep into his mind. Could they really outrun Omicron? Had all their worry and training been for nothing? His gaze was captured by the large, pale green planet they were approaching. It had two rings and its surface swirled with gaseous storms. It was unlike any body Lucas had seen before. He wondered what the Sorins had named it. The planet became enormous. Lucas kept his eyes fixed on it as Alpha barreled straight ahead. Briefly, he caught a glimmer of something that didn't look like gas movement, a minuscule shimmer that shouldn't have been there. And then, from the same spot, three bright blue lights began to glow. "Alpha!" he cried. But as he did so, the lights fired. A pulse blast rocketed toward the ship. When it struck, every light went out, and Lucas and Asha were pitched off their feet from the impact while Alpha remained in the chair. As they picked themselves up, the lights came back on one by one. Lucas looked out of the view screen and saw that they were now floating through space, their engines having been knocked out and their desperate race interrupted by the blast. The stars drifted lazily around, and the green glow of the nearby planet blanketed the room. Straight ahead, there was a void in the stars, a void growing ever larger.
"He has arrived," Alpha said solemnly.
The hope of escape was gone. Alpha's prediction had proven true, and Omicron's invisible ship loomed ahead of them. Alpha flew out of the chair as the neural connectors snapped off from his temples with an audible crack. He raced over to the holotable and whirled through screen after screen, muttering to himself,
"Engines disabled, airlocks disabled, hull intact, life support online."
He turned to them with a conclusion.
"We will be boarded."
As he spoke the words, a loud clang reverberated through the ship. There was no confirmation from Alpha, but Lucas was sure that Omicron's vessel had now attached itself to their own in some way. The view screen flickered and changed from hazy stars to a familiar, imposing sight. Omicron's dark face and blue eyes appeared before them. Alpha stepped away from the holotable and approached the front of the room. Omicron snarled something in Zolan.
"What's he saying?"
Asha asked. Alpha continued to listen to his grunts. He flipped a switch on his translator, and it began broadcasting what Omicron was saying through the holotable behind them. It wasn't reading his brainwaves from this distance, but the language was indeed being translated into understandable English.
"Greetings, lost child. It seems I have found you at last,"
Alpha growled back.
"I am no child of yours." "And yet you have no father."
"Only because of your actions,"
Omicron sneered.
"Your clan was killed in a raid, as you have been informed."
"A raid orchestrated by whom? And all surviving members were eliminated? An unlikely scenario, considering many are spread across the planet."
"No matter the cause, your services are required on Zala. Your past transgressions have been forgiven, from your cowardice during Earth campaign to your destruction of the station where you slaughtered thousands of your brethren with the aid of Sorens.
His voice carried a tone of very obvious disgust as he motioned with his claw to Lucas and Asha, standing beside Alpha, staring up at the screen. He let out a loud roar that shook the walls.
And you dare lecture me about the death of your traitorous clan? So you admit your misdeed?
Omicron threw up his claw dismissively.
What of it? Your father disobeyed an explicit directive and compromised the security of the entire war effort. He made the foolish mistake of trusting your brothers with his findings, and as such your entire clan was deemed a threat, no matter their scientific value. Then why spare me? Why not obliterate this ship when you had the opportunity? Study of your genes has shown that you will develop into a formidable mind. It would be unfortunate if we were not able to come to an arrangement for you to continue your work on Zala, as your clan has for generations, producing some of our finest technology, until you wiped them out. It was necessary for the preservation of our species.
What did my father find?
If you learned that information, we would be forced to execute you as well, no matter your inherent worth to the cause. We trust that you will see the error of your clan's ways and give up this foolish pursuit of refuge on Sora.
Omicron leaned forward and continued.
For someone with such a high intelligence quotient, you appear to be a fool. Do you really think the Sorens will welcome you?
Alpha stood defiantly, his claws clutched into fists.
I offer knowledge far beyond what they possess. I bring with me humans, Sorens from another world. They think themselves alone in the universe. They will embrace us.
Omicron shook his head.
You know nothing of the cruelty of the Sorens. You think you understand this conflict. You think our regime corrupt and barbaric. You are too similar to your father, and if you do not submit, you will meet the same fate.
You merely prove yourself a barbarian,
Alpha replied. Omicron leaned away.
Further debate would appear to be useless, as it appears you have made your choice. You will return to Zala. Your ill-chosen companions will be destroyed. My men are already on board.
The screen cut to black, and Alpha raced over to the holo table.
They're here already?
Alpha scrambled through monitor after monitor, but they were all deactivated.
They disabled all of our sensors. I thought we would have more warning.
He shut down the console.
We must depart immediately.
Alpha walked over to his suit and crawled inside. The metal plate shifted and engulfed him.
To point A?
Lucas asked, remembering their plan.
Yes,
Alpha said from inside the mech.
Let us hope we are not too late.
In making preparations for the coming battle, Alpha predicted Omicron's troops would be drawn to the stasis room first, where 11 humans were suspended in tanks. The Zalan's equipment would merely detect the life forms, not the fact they were brain dead, and as such they might deem the chamber a haven for a secret collection of stowaways that needed to be exterminated. The elevator had been rendered offline, but was likely too slow for their purposes anyway. Instead, in preparation for the battle, they'd already cut large holes in the hallway floors, allowing for easy, fast access between levels. The three of them reached the first opening outside the CIC, and Alpha's thundering metal suit dove straight into it. A loud, jarring clank from below indicated he'd landed. Lucas and Asha affixed their helmets while they ran toward the opening. They leapt into it without a moment's hesitation, an action they'd practiced repeatedly these past few weeks. The 15-foot drop was a breeze, since their armored suits absorbed the impact. One more drop, and they were in the laboratory hallway. This time, all three of them landed at the same time, their collective weight making a crater in the metal floor. As they looked up, they saw Omicron's troops for the first time. There were five of them at the end of the hall, two busy cutting through the door to the stasis room while the rest stood guard. There was no look of surprise on their faces, as each wore menacing helmets that engulfed their entire heads. Their dark armor covered every inch of them.
Far from the chunkiness of their own suits, the troops' plating was sleek and streamlined. Lucas recognized the Zalan symbol for Paragon emblazoned on their breastplate. These soldiers were not the clumsy misfits that guarded the fuel station. Alpha had warned them, but to see them now sent unwanted chills up Lucas's spine. In an instant, the hallway erupted with gunfire. The enclosed space was a nightmare for engagement, but Alpha's giant mech suit was able to act as a shield for them. It lumbered toward the soldiers, taking shots from their energy rifles as Lucas and Asha fired their own weapons from underneath each of its arms. They were fast, very fast. They dodged plasma rounds and fission bullets alike, and in seconds the back wall had been blasted through to the hull, which was the only thing keeping them from blowing a hole in the ship with their fire. A blast from Alpha's arm cannon finally caused one of them to stagger. Lucas managed to catch him with a spray of plasma from Natalie's full auto mode, and the rounds ate through his suit like acid. Just as soon as he started mentally celebrating, a round caught him square in the chest. He flew backward onto the ground and looked down to see a smoking dent in his black alloy breastplate. He winced in pain, but staggered to his feet to rejoin the fight. Asha took a grazing round to her left arm, and it cut through the armor all the way to the skin. But the soldiers were ultimately cornered. As the trio moved closer, there began to be less time and space to dodge bullets. Alpha caught one of them directly in the chest, the explosive round disintegrating him on the spot. Asha managed to hit the leg of a soldier attempting to dive out of the way, and the fission bullet caused his leg to detach at the knee. Even over the sounds of constant fire, Lucas could hear him screaming on the ground. Asha ducked as a stream of rounds went over her head. Lucas flipped a switch and Natalie's barrel extended. Thermal vision cut through the smoke, and he targeted the white shapes ahead. A single piercing round went through the right soldier's helmet, and black blood sprayed out the back of his head. The last soldier pulled his rifle's trigger, only to find it broken. Asha had grazed it with a round, and he dropped it to whip out an energy pistol instead. They were less than 20 feet away now, and Lucas was amazed at the soldier that stood before him. Even in the face of certain death, he fired away at them, praying he'd connect with a shot. Such courage! Lucas spun out from behind the armored Alpha and blew him apart with a shotgun blast. The noise was even more deafening than in test fire mode. Alpha examined the door that stood next to the pile of corpses reeking of cooked flesh. A few seconds longer and they might have cut through the door entirely, but it remained intact with no piercing damage. Lucas thought he heard Noah giggle from inside Alpha's rear compartment. "Back to command," Alpha ordered, and they began sprinting down the hallway where they'd just come from. Lucas held up his hand to stop them. He checked a readout on his suit, a motion sensor. He slowly pointed upward toward the hole they'd come through a few yards ahead. The quiet shifting of metal could be heard above. Aiming Natalie upward, Lucas activated his X-scope. Above them, he could see through the ceiling, where another squad of 6 or 7 skeletal soldiers hovered around the hole, waiting for them to climb back up. Lucas flipped a switch. His barrel shortened and widened. He signaled to Asha and Alpha, who nodded, 3, 2, 1. He blasted the ceiling just to the right of the hole. 4 Zalans tumbled down to the hallway floor. Alpha immediately crushed one's head with his massive metal foot, while Asha celebrated a chance to use her dearly beloved blade. As promised, it tore through the soldiers who were struggling to reach their feet. In an instant, the 3 of them were in pieces, black blood spatter coating the walls and their own suits. Asha suddenly looked up and raised her sword. It blocked the first shot from the soldiers that remained above, but the 2nd and 3rd caught her in the chest and she rocketed backward into Alpha's mech. Lucas sprayed a stream of rounds at their knees. They dodged the barrage, except for one of them who staggered and fell through the hole. Lucas leapt on him immediately and jammed his knife through the metal mask. Blood pooled out around him and joined that of his comrades on the floor. Alpha discharged his cannon arm and the final soldier was obliterated as more of the ceiling came down around them. Lucas ran over to check on Asha, who was writhing on the ground. He pulled off his helmet and removed hers as well.
"Where are you hit?" he asked frantically. She gasped for breath.
"First one, hit plate. 2nd, shoulder. Ow."
Lucas now saw the smoking hole near her right collarbone. He searched for the release on her chest plate, and once he found it, peeled the entire apparatus off. Underneath, she was wearing a pressurized black bodysuit, as they all were. It was an organic material meant to seal itself after damage, stopping blood from exiting wounds, among other uses. Quickly, Lucas reached into his own suit and pulled out Alpha's medical cauterizing tool.
He cut open the resealed suit with his knife and sprayed the gel into her wound. She winced as it hissed and steamed. Soon, however, the bleeding stopped. A fresh layer of faux skin began to form over the wound, and the organic material mended itself from the knife slit. She breathed a sigh of relief.
"That'll do,"
she said as she picked up her chest plate and reattached it over her torso. Lucas helped her to her feet, and both put their helmets back on. Alpha's mech doubled as a ladder to the next level. He extended his metal clawed arm above his head, and Asha and Lucas were able to scramble up the suit to the barracks level. Alpha gripped the edge of the destroyed floor with his claw and hoisted himself up with boost from his mechanized legs. They executed the same maneuver to reach the command level, but as Alpha landed, they saw another contingent of soldiers rounding the